This is The Guardian.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Frank Lampard is, you what now, going to lead Chelsea out of the Bernabeu in the Champions League quarterfinals? And what, Leicester want Martin O'Neill? Can he still get a tune from Muzzy, is it? What parallel universe is this? I see Barry didn't know that until his eyebrows were raised. We'll get to all of that. First off, the football from last night. Some absolutely wonderful defensive lapses from West Ham at home to Newcastle, who take full advantage to go third. Ready the Moyes voice note. It feels impolite for a team near the bottom to keep hold of their manager for a whole season. Manchester United and Marcus Rashford see off Brentford in a forgettable game, but an important victory nonetheless. There's some Lionesses to look forward to in the Finalissima and a Premier League preview. The games are in 2 days, by which time presumably Doug Livermore Spurs will take on Steve Gritt's Brighton and Ian Bramford will attempt Southampton's great escape. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Robin Cowan, welcome.
Good morning, Max.
Hello, Barry Glendenning.
Hello, Max.
And hello, Johnny Liu.
Hi, Max.
And we'll get to Frank Lampard going to Chelsea, which seems utterly ridiculous, but maybe a good idea. I mean, who knows anymore? But let's actually talk about the football that happened last night first. Newcastle winning 5-1 at West Ham. Manchester United beating Brentford. So Newcastle and Manchester United both go 3 clear of Spurs in fifth, both with a game in hand as well. West Ham stay 15th, level on points with Everton, Forest and Bournemouth. They still have a game in hand, but their goal difference was not helped yesterday. Normally, Barry, you should congratulate the winning team, but West Ham's defensive horror show was sort of miraculous yesterday.
Yeah, it was crazy. The number of individual errors that led to goals. But Newcastle did play very well and they're starting to show their strength and depth. I think this is their fourth win in a row. Joe Ellington came in for Joe Willock and was brilliant. Scored a couple of nice goals, but again, individual errors. David Moyes must have been just beside himself with rage afterwards. In the dressing room, at least, he managed to contain himself in his post-match interviews. But when you are down amongst the dead men, as West Ham are, you just simply cannot afford to give away goals like that. It was comical. I mean, Lucas Fabianski made a couple of excellent saves, but was also responsible for one, if not two, goals. That one where he played the ball to a guard who clearly didn't want it and was pointing to, I think it was Romero out, you know, wide on the touchline, give it to him instead. And it was comically inept from West Ham at times.
Robin, I don't know which image I liked more. Either Moyes' face after, you know, Aguerd completely forgot he was on a football pitch, like just after half time, just when he got into it, back into it. Or there's this brilliant photo that somebody sent me of Alexander Isak and Fabianski, both with their hands on their hips, just watching the ball, just kind of lollop towards the goal. Like it was, David Moyes, I mean, you can't blame him for those mistakes, can you? Or can you?
That's a really good question because I mean, ultimately, I think you probably can't, but just, looking at the, especially, you know, Jacob Steinberg's obviously a West Ham fan and he's following it. From what I gather, a lot of the fans don't want him there. And I think that atmosphere is probably contributing to some of these errors and just a general performance. And it was a weird game, actually, because they could have scored in the first sort of few seconds, couldn't they? And Guimaraes nearly scored an own goal. And then, as you mentioned, they got all momentum back just before half-time with Kurt Zouma's goal, and probably half-time didn't come at a good time. And then all that momentum was just pissed on after like 20 seconds with that Aguero. I mean, yeah, he was scratching about trying to control the ball, and then that was that. And yeah, that image of, he was sort of had his hands on his knees like someone had just kicked him in the nuts, David Moyes. And yeah, and I agree with that. It was very funny seeing him post-match. I think it's almost giving himself a stomach ulcer going, the lads gave it everything. I can't remember. I'm sure pre that he was going absolutely bananas at them in the dressing room. Just love to see the sort of before and after that.
Sorry, I just realised I transferred Romero from Spurs to West Ham. I meant Emerson.
Right. Oh, noted. Yeah, well, I was like, I can't remember every West Ham player. Maybe there is one called Romero. I don't know. Is Moyes' time up? Johnny, what do you reckon?
I think so. They're not playing for each other anymore, which is basically the minimum requirement you want from a David Moyes team. It's fine if the attack is a bit gummed up and, you know, they're struggling for goals. But if their players, you know, if the kind of the defence and the midfield aren't really kind of meshing with each other, if the players aren't making covering runs, if they're not really cohering at the back, then you've really lost the main, some might say only point of having David Moyes as your manager. Some of the defending, I mean, you can look at the individual errors and obviously they were egregious, but it's the way that players kind of shirked responsibility. And, you know, Aguero not wanting the ball is kind of, you know, why don't you want the ball? And then you see Declan Rice coming in like a few seconds later than he should be, just going, all right, well, I'll come in and show for it. And there was so much of that. Markers, passing off their marker, you know, players passing off their marker to other players and not getting, you know, not doubling up. There is so much of that. And I think that is, you know, you can't physically blame individual errors on a manager, but the manager certainly creates the tactical and I guess the emotional circumstances in which those mistakes become a lot more likely. And by way of contrast, I mean, I think it is worth saying about Newcastle, you know, they were gifted a few goals, but they create that pressure through working for each other, through covering every inch. And they are, you know, probably the best pressing team in the Premier League at the moment, I would say. The way they hunt down players in a really intelligent way as a team. They press to a certain side of a defender. So they kind of force you into the option you don't want to go to. They were brilliant against United. They weren't quite as on it against West Ham, but they didn't have to be. But yeah, like in his sabbatical, Eddie Howe went to study, he went to shadow Diego Simeone at Atletico Madrid, and you can kind of, you really see that influence in the way they play. They are absolutely ruthless.
Yeah, I mean, you could probably argue West Ham were brilliant for the opening 55 seconds.
They had a chance, they hit the post,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, you can't blame Moyes for the individual errors, but you can blame him for the fact that when Newcastle made the pitch really big and they were playing these raking balls, you know, diagonals and through the centre, you can blame him for the fact he had no way of explaining to his players how to deal with it, because they clearly couldn't. And I suppose that's on him, isn't it?
And I suppose so. And it's probably unfair on Newcastle to say it seemed as if all they had to do was kick it quite a long way and one of their players would be basically clean through or have a one-on-one. But actually some of their play, there was that move, Robin, was it, where Longstaff played that raking pass and it was sort of one touch and I can't remember who got the shot away, maybe Murphy. But it does show the level that they're playing at is incredibly high.
Yeah, no, I mean, they are really a well-oiled machine. And we saw that against Manchester United as well at the weekend. So, no, they're absolute credit to them. But obviously, I feel like they did show a few weaknesses. You know, again, we mentioned the opening chance and, you know, Kurt Zouma with the header, you know, perhaps sometimes defensively, they have given up chances. But in terms of their attacking, and as Johnny mentioned, they're pretty relentless, you know, don't give you much time on the ball at all. It was a really good performance and obviously puts them in a really good position for the Champions League. I just wonder, it seems to be a trend now with West Ham. They clearly don't want to sack him before the end of the season. They really don't want to. That's clear. I just wonder if they give it Nolan till the end of the season, perhaps. I don't know if that's... I mean, I'm not saying that's a good idea, but it just seems like, as I said before, there was no one there at the end, was there? They'd all... I mean, understandably, they'd all gone. And so the boos weren't ringing out because there was no one to boo. And I just feel like a lot of the fans just want him removed. And maybe just that sort of switch, as we'll get on to later with Chelsea, just that sort of atmosphere change.
Well, it should be Harry Redknapp and Frank Lampard Senior, right? Shouldn't it? And actually, I did check to see if West Ham were playing Chelsea again this season, to see if the Lampards could face each other in the dugouts. Newcastle's next four game... Carry on, Robin. And they're
are
not.
They?
No, sadly, they're not.
Okay, don't want it then. Don't bother.
Newcastle's next four games are, they've got Brentford away, Villa away, Spurs at home, Everton away. Sort of feel they could win all of them, Johnny, or they could lose all of them. It's very hard. I mean, the bottom of the table is obviously impossible to pick, but also that race for the top four, and I know now them and Man United are, you know, a little bit of leeway between them and Spurs, but impossible to call.
Yeah, and they don't have the distraction of, unlike United, they don't have the distraction of the Europa League or the FA Cup. These are, you know, they can literally treat these as you know, 9 or 10 cup finals. And there is a momentum to them now. I think there were questions, I think, after the Carabao Cup final, whether they'd kind of run out of puff a little bit. But the international break has come at a really good time for them. They seem to have got back on the training pitch, got a bit more energy, got a, you know, a bit more spark, and yeah, the fixtures are quite kind to them.
I don't think they should treat the remaining fixtures as 9 cup finals, given the way they played the actual cup final. They got to.
That's a very good point. Meanwhile, Manchester United beat Brentford 1-0. Barry, not a huge amount to say about this game, apart from it's a really good win for Manchester United, and it's not about performances, it's about results now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they were humiliated in the corresponding fixture. It was the second game of the season, and when they lost 4-0, Brentford scored 4 times in the first half. So I suppose it's payback for that. It was a very comfortable 1-0 win. They didn't really have to get out of second gear, did they? And I think Brentford only created one decent chance, which wasn't even that good a chance. And I expected more for Brentford, if I'm honest, but it wasn't one of their better performances, and they deservedly lost. And there's reading stuff this morning that Manchester United are a little over-reliant on Marcus Rashford, but I suppose as long as he's banging them in, and he is, it's 28 for the season for him now, 10 of them winners, that's not going to be a problem.
Hmm. Although his first in the league since the 19th of February, which surprised all of us. I thought he'd been scoring like 2 a game. But yeah, when he doesn't score, they don't tend to do as well. I don't know, Robin, if you have any other further fascinating thoughts on this game. I didn't find it gripping.
Good goal, wasn't it, Barry? That's the only thing I'd say from Rashford. I mean, he just looked so much more relaxed in front of goal. Like, I could see him a couple of years ago sort of snatching at that and putting it over the bar. It was quite a very good finish again from him.
Yeah, and Sabitzer set it up well, and he actually played a really good game. And I go, you know, this whole kind of Casemiro-like hole was a sort of strong performance from him, and probably needed, wasn't it? Otherwise, that'll do for the Manchester United-Brentford game. Oh, yes, Barry, you can come in.
I was just going to say that. I thought before this game, Brentford might score by capitalising on a David De Gea error, because I thought they would put him under pressure, and they almost scored from a David De Gea error when he took a kick out that cannoned off Ivan Toney but didn't go the right side of the bar or upright.
All right, that'll do for part one. Part two will be a Premier League preview, but be mostly about Frank Lampard.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Dermot says, how does Lampard keep failing upwards? There hasn't been as much rubbish about DNA since Jurassic Park. Kenny says, do we hope Lampard does just well enough to be offered a four-year contract and then get sacked 10 games into next season when it inevitably goes to shit? Mr. Leonard says, Frank Lampard is the anti-Potter. The new players will all know who he is. We all know he's tactically weak. He will tell each player to win their individual battles and after the game blame the players for not achieving the required result. And Andy says, excuse the language, if Lampard wins the Champions League, I'm never watching another single second of this stupid fucking sport. Is that pathetic? Chelsea have opened talks with Frank Lampard over a stunning return, writes Jacob Steinberg, as interim manager as they continue their search for a permanent replacement for Graham Potter. This feels odd, Johnny.
Yeah, I mean, it's the, you know, on one level, it's the logical conclusion of the Premier League's 2020s banter era. This is, you know, it's like a Marvel comic book, right? Which where all the storylines essentially, you know, cross over and cross pollinate and regenerate. And yeah, Frank Lampard back at Chelsea. Why not? Why fucking not? The thing is, you know, it is funny, but also it really kind of sucks if you think about it. And like Troy Townsend did a tweet last night about it was kind of cryptic, but the gist of it being is this really how like massive coaching jobs, albeit interim, are being given out at the very top of the game these days? You know, Troy has done so much good work on trying to educate people about the structural flaws, the structural injustices in the game. And without wishing to single out Frank Lampard on every occasion, it is fair to single out Frank Lampard on this occasion, because if Frank Lampard is just being handed a, you know, a job at a Champions League club for now on the basis of, you know, what seems to be very little due process, very little kind of, you know, recruitment process, that is kind of the problem. That is a massive, massive problem in the game. And you can see why people like Troy and others kind of despair of getting a more kind of meritocratic, diverse pool of talent into the top reaches of the game when things like this are happening.
Can we simultaneously agree with all of that and also find it hilarious that Frank Lampard has got another go at managing Chelsea?
Yeah, if you want. I mean, it is kind of funny. It is funny. But like, say he wins the Champions League from that opportunity, which he probably hasn't earned through merit. What could somebody else have done with that? What could somebody else have done with that? You know, have that opportunity?
Yeah, it's a very good point. Matt Law from the Telegraph tweeting Frank Lampard due into Cobham later this morning with the expectation he'll take the first training session as caretaker manager later on. I mean, that's a really good point, Barry. Like, Chelsea could win the Champions League, right? And then what happens? I mean, I suppose they've won the Champions League. They've done it before. Does that mean he stays?
Yeah, well, I suppose following on from what Johnny was saying, they've handed him this job, which he doesn't really appear to deserve on merit, so they can focus on this exhaustive recruitment process we keep hearing about. But they've all just sacked a manager who is demonstrably better at managing football teams than Frank Lampard. And now they've brought in a manager who has previously been sacked by Chelsea and then who went on to be sacked by Everton, who are a demonstrably less successful football club than Chelsea. But so it doesn't make sense, and it's quite amusing. But I suppose how much damage can he do in a quite limited space of time? And yes, he could win the Champions League. And then, you know, that's happened before at Chelsea, Roberto Di Matteo. That didn't mean he automatically got to keep the job. They still got rid of him.
Yeah, I think he carried on for a bit.
Yeah, he carried on for a few months.
Oh, did he? Right. Oh, I apologise. My mistake. But I don't think he will win the Champions League, let's say.
No, I mean, they haven't got the easiest draw, have they? I mean, Luis Enrique and Julian Nagelsmann are unattached and available. So couldn't they, if they wanted one of them, Robin, they just keep interviewing them for months? I also heard they're checking out what Antonio Conte thinks. I mean, that's Lampard for 10 games and then Conte. And you're like, this can't be real. Is this what is this?
Yeah. What year is this, young boy? I know. It's I agree with Johnny. I mean, I think with the caveat that all of what Johnny just said is absolutely true, and it's really frustrating that there are so many coaches out there that are more deserving. It is hilarious. And the fact that Conte, after you know, his explosive exit from Spurs, and the fact that it really ended sourly the first time at Chelsea, that he's even being considered. It's like they're not really casting their net very far. I do wonder perhaps, you know, a Nagelsmann or a Luis Enrique have said that maybe they don't want to take over now. They prefer to do it in the summer. So that's why they've gone for the interim option. But yeah, people are saying this is a PR win for the fans. He's going to be welcomed back. Is that true? I mean, it might be. I'm not a Chelsea fan, so I don't know. Is it as simple as sort of rudimental as that? That he's going to be, you know, clapped when he gets back to Stamford Bridge, and that will make a difference. I don't know.
I think they will. I think they will welcome him. Yeah. As long as he's, you know, like Solskjaer at United, they did kind of welcome him in as a club legend. You know, he will always be welcome back at the Bridge. He was there at the weekend, wasn't he? Just sort of lurking.
Yeah, but Solskjaer wouldn't be welcome back. No, Ten Hag said I'm off. Would Solskjaer be welcome back again? Like that? I mean, that's the point. Lampard had the DNA and had the fans on side, and still failed as the Chelsea manager, and they've gone. Well, this it was kind of proof of concept. It was like it disproved the concept that DNA made the difference, and knowing the club and, you know, already knowing the Wi-Fi code and where the toilets are actually has any like material benefit to you apart from the fans like you.
It wasn't an unmitigated failure.
You know, it gives you a bit.
They were miserable for about 10, 12 games, but actually they started that season quite well. They went through this incredible period of like not conceding. And in his first season, they had quite a lot of fun. So I mean, there were some things to cling on to there. The way he develops, you know, young players like Mason Mount, Fikayo Tomori, there is a little bit of a legacy for the fans at least to cling on to there. So you know, as long as if it's just 10 games, I think they'll buy that.
Oliver says Everton manager's failing upwards. Martinez sacked, then to Belgium. Koeman sacked, then to Barcelona. Lampard sacked, back to Chelsea. Who will Dyche go on to manage when he's eventually sacked next January? Madrid, PSG. they're playing Wolves. Worth pointing out that Daniel Podence has been charged by the FA after he allegedly spat at Brennan Johnson during the 1-1 draw with Forest. And we don't need to go into. We did spend 15 minutes on Monday talking about imaginary saliva. We can probably avoid going into that. Leicester-Bournemouth is a massive game at the bottom. Leicester rumoured to be looking at bringing in Martin O'Neill. What is going on, Robin?
Again, I ask, what year is this? When was his last job? Was it he had a pretty miserable time at Forest, didn't he, with Roy Keane? Is that what... I was just trying to think what was
Forest. Forest.
Since then he's been...
Was that Forest or Villa or both?
Villa was 2006 to 2010.
And then I think he went to Forest, and it was during their time where they kept sacking managers and it didn't work out. They thought, oh, club legends will bring them back. Yeah, since then he's been doing the rounds promoting a book. So maybe that's sort of, I don't know, flagged up his availability. But I mean, it's just...
Do you think it's like Roy Hodgson going back made people think, oh, we could just, you know, here's an easy way to find somebody. Just look, check who has managed your club before and just give it to them. I mean, maybe Martinino won't get the job. And he's like, he could be good, right? What do they need? What do they need? 2-3 wins, Barry? Like, Martin O'Neill's got that kind of energy about him, or at least he did in 1995.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how much energy he has now, but yeah, I do remember him doing the rounds promoting his book and his series of very entertaining interviews. I quite like Martin O'Neill. It just reminds me of, you know, that managerial merry-go-round of yore, which is probably covered in a tarpaulin at the back of some fairground now, with Mickey Adams and Steve Bruce and David O'Leary and Martin O'Neill all, you know, clinging to their rusting horses and elephants and cup and saucer.
I mean, very not fair on Alan Kirbishley to not even get a mention on that merry-go-round.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Kerbs. Yeah, look, it's all just nuts. It's really gone nuts. But yeah, he could do well. It could be a disaster. We don't know, but fingers crossed, we get to find out.
Well, he's a big crime buff, isn't he, O'Neill? You know, he studied true crime and you know, what's the first rule of, you know, criminology? The perpetrator always returns to the scene of their original crime. But also, I don't know why you would want to a load of players who you've been signed to play Brendan Rodgers football to be managed by Martin O'Neill for 10 minutes, let alone 10 games.
What would be funny is if he took the Leicester job and then got poached by Forrest after 2 games.
Well, yeah. But I mean, you know, that is also, like, Leicester Bournemouth is such a huge game, Robin, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if they'll have a new interim manager, Martin O'Neill, someone else, Dave Bassett by that time. But they absolutely have to win that game.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Or do they have to win? Do they have to win it? Well, I don't know if anyone at the bottom has to win it, because you have to win next week if you don't win this week.
No, that's the thing. This is what's crazy about this relegation battle, is you don't have to win, because even Southampton have a chance of getting out of it. It's just mad. You don't have to put a run of results together. You just don't. It might just be whoever wins on the last day, and it's like, yeah, sort of musical chairs. Who doesn't grab a chair at the end of the season? It's just... So actually, it's you just got to stay in touching distance, because they all keep losing. They all are. So maybe, I mean, they don't really have to win, but I would say they're in a really bad situation, Leicester, and this could be, you know, the fact that they're on this run is it's really not working. And I think, did they ask Graham Potter to manage them, like, basically minutes after they sacked Brendan Rodgers? I mean, yeah, it's just like a lot of these situations, it doesn't seem to be a lot of long-term planning going on and sort of mapping out what could happen situationally, things like that. So
is it quite reassuring that all these incredibly rich people also are sort of like the rest of us, don't actually really know what they're ever really doing, and it just sort of happens to, you know, just have to make some, like, you know, I don't have to make any of these massive decisions, right? So like, maybe it's hard, right? Maybe we should give them a break. It's difficult. And there's no sort of rhyme or reason to getting it right. I guess there are a few that have a better record at getting it right, don't they? Dr. Joseph Venglosh's Aston Villa take on Nottingham Forest. Kapanosti says, have Nottingham Forest. Frank Clark's Nottingham Forest. Yeah, no, of course. Have Nottingham Forest redefined the dreaded vote of confidence. Steve Cooper's got his second vote of confidence in a season, hasn't he? The owners made a statement. Yes, Barry?
Well, I looked for any sign of confidence in that statement, and it was conspicuously absent. All it said was, he is still our manager and we need to start winning games. It didn't say, we are confident he will start winning games.
No one denies that our club is in a difficult position in the Premier League, but we wish to end the speculation and false and disruptive reporting in the media to confirm that Steve Cooper remains our manager at Nottingham Forest. We have all been disappointed with recent performances, and it is very clear that a lot of hard work needs to be done to address this urgently. They've got
not much confidence there, is there?
You don't get. I don't think you get any extra credit for that, because clearly they were really kind of they were touting the idea of getting rid of Cooper. They were circulating it, and obviously then to blame this kind of false speculation is a little bit rich. You know, like, you know, famously Boris Johnson had these two like articles written, one backing Brexit, and it feels like Forrest had one letter saying, like, one statement saying, we're getting, you know, with regret, we're parting company with Steve Cooper. Another one saying, we fully back Steve Cooper. And they've just decided to put one of them out, and all the fans are going, great, fantastic. You don't get any extra credit for that, I'm afraid.
Do you think they, what if they accidentally wanted to sack him and they put the wrong one out? And now they're like, no, we've got to stick with him now. Leeds Palace, also big at the bottom. Palace, Ed Aaron saying, have been 12th for 105 days now, which is tremendous. This is really actually hard to stay in 12th. It's almost harder to stay 12th for 105 days than it is to stay top for 105 days, I would have thought. Liverpool Arsenal is a, well, you sort of feel like this is a tough game for Arsenal, Robin, but I don't know if it is.
Liverpool are different at home. They do have, you know, they are better, but I would still be surprised if Arsenal don't win, given the absolute state, mentally in particular, Liverpool are in. I mean, Jurgen Klopp saying, why am I still here when everyone's being sacked around me is quite telling, I think. In terms of sort of momentum and where each team is, it's night and day. So I'd be very surprised if Liverpool get anything out of this. But then, I mean, how did they beat Man United? Was it 7-0? 7-0.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I have no idea.
That was like a fever dream. I mean, yeah, it's this sort of second half of the season. I think we all said like it was going to be, you know, maybe some weird things going to happen because of the break World Cup. And yeah. It's sort of coming to pass a little bit.
True. I mean, I understand why players are tired, but owners don't need to be tired because of the World Cup.
Oh, another game.
Yeah. Everton go to Manchester United. Obviously got that good point on Monday night. Spurs play Brighton. Osh says, with Spurs now finally not fourth, are we about to see the crumbling of civilization as we know it? I think as long as Crystal Palace stay 12th, then we should be all right. Who have we forgotten? Southampton, Manchester City. Can you see Southampton getting anything, Barry?
No, absolutely not. Which means they probably will.
Some gate receipts.
It is something, isn't it? Anyway, well, we'll look back at all those games on Monday, and that'll do for part two. Part three, we'll start with the Lionesses.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Robin, you're heading to the Finalissima this evening. Do we like the name? Sounds like a sort of Eurovision entry to me. Or something like that, but
yeah, I quite like saying it.
Okay, well that's good. Well, it's lucky you're commentating, I presume, so you get to say it.
Yeah, on the world feed, so I have to be particularly non-partisan. But I think that'll be quite easy because it's going to be a good game. It's Brazil are missing a couple of big players, like Marta is injured, Dabinha, who's their main goal scorer. But yeah, in terms of opposition, they had very easy opposition, England, at the Arnold Clark Cup, and they swept them aside. So this is the last camp before Serena Wiegmann selects her World Cup squad. So it's quite a big set of fixtures. So they've got, yeah, Brazil tonight and then Australia next week at Brentford. So yeah, two teams that are kind of will be hoping to go far in the World Cup. So yeah, should be interesting to see what she does.
I mean, I know Marta's an absolute legend. Is she still a definite starter for Brazil? I mean, I know she's played about a million games.
Yeah, I mean, we're not into Cristiano Ronaldo territory because she actually still contributes quite a lot. but yeah, she's come back from an ACL and just it's not she's just sort of got a hamstring injury, I think, or something like that. So she'll be playing at the World Cup. No, she's still, you know, scores loads of goals for them and plays at a good level in America in the NWSL. So if she's fit, she would start.
I mean, in terms of England, how many fringe players, you know, for how many players is this a make or break couple of games, would you say?
Yeah, quite a few. It's interesting because obviously Serena Wiegmann famously didn't change her starting 11 during the Euros at all. And she did say yesterday that she's not going to experiment that much. So I think when we see the starting lineup today, it could be very similar to what we see the opening game in Australia. The big player they're missing is Millie Bright, who injured herself in Chelsea's first leg of their Champions League win against Lyon. So I think we're all hoping that she's going to be okay for the World Cup because her and Leah Williamson just were absolutely titanic at the back together. They complemented each other so well because Williamson's just a terrific ball player and Bright, even though she can pull off some great crossfield balls as well. She's the brawn. She was really, really key to success. So yeah, she would be a huge miss. So yeah, that's again going to be interesting to see what Serena Wiegmann does with that today.
Just on that Chelsea-Lyon game, which was an insane end to that game. Am I the only person who thought that penalty was incredibly soft?
No, you're not. No, it was.
That is not clear and obvious. I mean, for people who haven't seen it, basically Chelsea are 2-0 down in to Lyon. They're going out of the Champions League. And in injury time, in extra time, Lauren James goes down, kicks her own feet. She's slightly touched by a Lyon defender, but I just don't think in any world it's a penalty. And it goes to VAR and it's given. And I just couldn't believe it. And I don't know what Emma Hayes said after the game. I don't know. She said, well, you get sometimes. Well, I don't know what she said. I don't need to pretend to know what she said. And I don't know what the Lyon.
She was very angry.
Yeah.
I mean, you say not in any world, but we do see them quite a lot, actually. I feel morally, I agree with you. I don't like those being given as penalties, but they are given quite a lot every week in the Premier League.
There's an interesting point there where it's often said that, you know, crowds have a massive influence, you know, on those sorts of decisions. You know, there's all these sort of studies done on how referees are influenced by crowds. And, you know, there would be a long time in women's football when it kind of wasn't a factor. But the fact that, you know, you are now getting crowds that are loud enough and big enough and partisan enough to influence a referee is weirdly kind of shows how far it's come.
Yeah. Anyway, good luck to Chelsea and Arsenal, who both got through, didn't they? Romelu Lukaku says Serie A must take action for real this time after he was racially abused by Juventus fans before being sent off on Tuesday. He was shown a second yellow card for holding his fingers to his lips in front of the home fans after scoring a 95th minute penalty in the Coppa Italia. History repeats itself, he wrote on Instagram, been through it in 2019 and 2023 again. This beautiful game should be enjoyed by everyone. He added, I hope the league really take actions for real this time. Juve said they would work with police to identify those responsible following the game. Onto any other business. Rob says, does Barry know where Avram Grant is managing now? And it's not Chelsea, by the way.
Not a clue, no.
Zambia. There we are. So I would have been mightily impressed had you got that. Zvonimir says, NBA player Reggie Bullock has bought a 5-acre island in Belize and he's turning it into a resort called Bullock Island. Which Premier League player would build the best resort island? The sort of question perhaps I should have forewarned you with. But which 5-acre island? Would you like to go to Vardy Land, Barry?
Crikey.
I could imagine that being quite full on.
Grealish, he'd have like the all you can eat Chinese.
That's true. Be quite a party.
I don't know. I'd visit Thomas Soucek Island, which would be kind of impeccably maintained. It would be unspectacular. Yeah. There would just be lots of wood around, you know, lots of wood structures and outdoorsy kind of activities.
Let's congratulate Jim, who sent us a lovely photo of his newborn son, Odran Lynch. Getting this little fella hooked up to Football Weekly early, possibly the youngest pod listener. I don't know how many minutes or days old Odran is, but he was fast asleep listening to this pod. So, like many others, I would suggest. But look, congratulations to you. And thanks for trying to force him. It's a bit like being forced to support a football team, isn't it? He has no choice in the matter currently. But it won't be long until he is turning off every screen and tablet that you have. Thanks so much for your time today, everybody. Thanks, Robin.
Thanks, Max.
Thank you, Johnny.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Barry.
Thanks, Max.
Football Weekly is produced by Joel Grove. Our executive producer is Danielle Stevens.
This is The Guardian.